The following is a home program given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Dasatkikari, recorded on October 23rd, 2010, in Copenhagen, Denmark.
So there are two different types of vairagya described in the writings of the great acharyas. There is yukta vairagya, which is to utilize everything in the service of God. And there is palgu vairagya. That's when you make a show of being a big, big renunciate. And it's interesting, this word, palgu. If you go to India, there is a river called the Palgu River. And if someone takes you, okay, come on, I'm going to show you the Palgu River. You go there, there's nothing but sand. What is this river? I don't see any water. It's just a bunch of sand. But they say they'll dig down inside the sand. The river is going under the water, under the land, under the sand. You see, it's an underground river. Under the surface of the earth, this river is flowing. So, Palgu Vairagya means, just like that Palgu River, you're making a show that all your material desires are dried up. But under the surface, they're all going on full force. You see? So we are not interested in this Palgu Vairagya. And I make a big show of being free of all material attachments. But within the heart, I'm cultivating so many material desires. We're not interested in this Palgu Vairagya. We're interested in the Yukta Vairagya, which means to use everything in the service of God. I ask you this question. Is there anything which is not the energy of God? Can you name anything which is not God's energy? Which is not coming from Him? Everything is the energy of God. So who is the actual owner of everything? Is it the Danish government? The Ford Motor Company? Who owns everything? Sarvaloka Maheshwaram. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, I am the owner of everything. So doesn't it make sense to engage everything, which is the property of an owner, in the service of that owner? Doesn't that make sense? That's just legal thing, you see. Just like you work for the airport, the security department. You use certain paraphernalia. I don't know, handcuffs? Do you carry handcuffs? No. Do you have any paraphernalia you carry with you that belongs to the airport? Walkie-talkie or something?
Yeah, flashlight, walkie-talkie.
Yeah. So, because that is the property of the airport, you see. You are meant to use that in the service of the airport. If you start using the walkie-talkie for some other purpose, then you may lose your job, you see, in this way. So, since everything that exists is the energy of God, those things are meant to be used in the service of God. And if you don't use them in the service of God, you may lose your position in the spiritual world. And guess what, my dear friends? That's why we're here. We were not utilizing the energy of God in the service of God. And that is why we are here. You see, that is the problem. Ichchadvesha samuttena dvanda mohena bharata saramohani sangmoham sargayanti param. In this way, so we have to be intelligent and see how we can get back to our original position. Of course, we are deriving some enjoyment now, but how much enjoyment we are deriving? It is mixed with so many unpleasant situations, you see. Our nature is we want to enjoy unlimitedly, but yet we are forced to take so many restrictions in our enjoyment. Why? If our nature is to enjoy unlimitedly, why we just can't naturally enjoy unlimitedly? There's some problem there. Something's going wrong, you see. There's some unhealthy condition of the consciousness that's preventing us from tasting our natural, getting our natural taste satisfied. So that is called ahankar, that is called false ego. Now that does not mean that the ego itself is false, no. What it means is there's two types of egos. There's the false ego and the real ego. The word ego means identity. If one identifies with the gross material body and takes the satisfaction of the senses of the gross material body to be his actual happiness, that is called false ego or false identity. On the other hand, if one understands his actual nature, that I am the servant of God, I'm not this body, I'm a spiritual being, qualitatively one with the Supreme Person. The Supreme Person is eternal. He's full of knowledge and bliss. I, being qualitatively one with Him, is His expanded energy. I'm also, by my very nature, eternal, full of knowledge and bliss. So all you really have to do to get to that point where you can experience unlimited bliss at every minute is to just get back to your natural condition. That's it. All you really have to do is just become natural again. Right now, we are living in an unnatural condition. We have been conditioned by a material society to misidentify ourselves, who are actually spirit. We have been conditioned to misidentify ourselves with matter. And that just doesn't work. It doesn't work. We've been taught to try to be something that we're not. It's completely artificial. It's no wonder that people are frustrated. It's no wonder that there's so many problems in the world. Global warming, terrorism, disease, famine, drought. It's no wonder these things are going on. It's all based on the fact that we're being educated to think that we are matter when we're actually spirit. In other words, the whole foundation in which of the civilization in which we are living is fallacious. The philosophical basis of the modern civilization is fallacious. Therefore, no matter how much you may pass legislation, create so many different policies, you're never going to solve the problem. I guarantee you will never solve the problems. Until you can get to the root cause of all the problems, you'll never solve them just on the symptomatic level. You'll never do it. Never. It's not possible. But if you will come to the actual root cause, that the self is misidentifying with matter, the eternal, full of knowledge, full of bliss self is misidentifying with temporary ignorance and suffering. So therefore, the process of spiritual enlightenment is the most important science. Where is it being taught in the public school? Where is it being taught? Where are people being taught that you're actually a spiritual being? They're being taught you're just a bunch of chemicals. That's all you are, is chemicals. Where's the proof? How they can teach such a concept? They were nothing but chemicals. Where's the proof for them? Where's the proof? What is the proof? We have proof that we're not just a bunch of chemicals. Right now, you're sitting in a bunch of chemicals. It's your present material body. When you were a little baby, there was a different set of chemicals there. You see. But you can remember now, sitting here tonight, you can remember experiences from your childhood when the chemicals that made up your body are quite different from the ones you have now. So the consciousness by simple analysis, we can see that the consciousness is different from the body. So why should we believe this dogma that we're nothing but chemicals? It just doesn't make sense that we'd be nothing but chemicals. If we're nothing but chemicals, then why I would cry when my family member dies? It's just chemicals. What's the big deal? It's just a bunch of chemicals. See, this idea that we're nothing but chemicals is a ridiculous idea. It's completely ridiculous. It's defeated in every sphere of analysis. It's defeated in every sphere of analysis. It's not a scientific principle. It's a dogma that persons who have an inimical nature have a grudge against God, have conjured up these different dogmas, and they're pounding them down our throats and calling it science. So I'm sorry, I don't want to think dogmatically. I want to see things very clearly from my own perception and intelligence. You see, I can see that this body I have now is not the same body I had when I was a little kid, but yet I remember when I was a little kid what I was doing. You see, sometimes, not everything, but you know, some things. So by clear analysis, I can understand I'm not this body. I had an identity beyond the body. So why should I believe some scientist who tells me I'm nothing but chemicals? Why should I put my faith in some ridiculous, absurd theory? No, I'm not going to do them. I would rather put my faith in those persons who've actually transcended the miseries of material existence, who are living in an enlightened state of consciousness and quality one with God. I'd rather put my faith in them. Actually, it's stated in the Shvetashvatara Upanishad, Yasya Deve Para Bhaktir, Tata Deve Tata Guru, Tasyaite Ketitahyarata Prakashyante Mahatmanaha. Only for those persons who have unflinching faith in the words of Guru and Krishna are all the imports of Vedic knowledge revealed. So the fact is, if you can come in contact with a bona fide spiritual master, if you can come in contact with the words of God in the revealed scriptures, such as Bhagavad Gita, and you can actually put some faith, then you'll have amazing realizations by doing them. You may say, why should I put faith? That sounds blind. No, don't. Just make an experiment. Just take this, just like you wear a pair of glasses, you see. Let's say you go to a doctor and he says, no, we've analyzed your eyes, and you know, you really need a pair of glasses. You think, well, I don't know, I've never worn glasses before. I think I'm okay, but the optometrist says, but here, let me just try these on and see the difference. And you go, wow, I didn't realize what I was missing. I can really see things quite different. This is really nice. Yeah, I'll take these glasses, sure. You see? So, in the beginning, the person thinks, why should I wear glasses? I can get by okay. But once he tries them on, he sees there's a big difference. So, we're just asking you, try on these glasses, Bhagavad Gita. Try to see the world through the eyes of this knowledge and see what it looks like when you look at it through this knowledge of the Bhagavad Gita. And see if it doesn't look better. See if it doesn't work better. See if things don't fit together better. You see? Make an experiment. I'm not asking anybody for blind faith here. I'm saying you read Bhagavad Gita. It is. We have the books. You have the books at the temple. We have books available. You can pick up a book in English or Danish. Yeah. And pick up a Bhagavad Gita. Study the Bhagavad Gita. Do we have any for sale here tonight? Any copies? But they're just a half a block away. But anybody wants a Bhagavad Gita, they can talk to you. You can, okay. So, kindly read this Bhagavad Gita. And try to see what things look like when you see through the eyes of the Bhagavad Gita, and you'll see this is wonderful. I've never had such an amazing vision of reality where everything makes sense, where everything is so positive, everything is so progressive, so enlivening. I've never had such an experience of seeing reality in this way ever before. So that's what Bhagavad Gita will do. If you can read the Bhagavad Gita and understand what Krishna is saying, you'll be amazed at how everything becomes transformed. Now, if there's any questions, you can pass them forward. Okay, let's see. You see many devotees who wear tattoos of Krishna. Is that okay? Yeah, it's okay. I mean, it's not necessary. Because Prabhupada never taught us to wear tattoos. I don't wear tattoos. It's not required. But if someone wants to do it, there is no harm. There's nothing wrong. So it's okay but we don't recommend it. It's not necessary. There are sometimes diseases. I know a person who got hepatitis C, which can be fatal from a tattoo, from getting tattooed. It's a dangerous thing to be tattooed. I mean, I know a devotee in New Zealand. Yeah, he has hepatitis C. It becomes fatal after a while. He got it from being tattooed. It's a dangerous thing, being tattooed. I don't recommend being tattooed. It's not. It's a very dangerous thing. But if you really want to do it, you know, it's your own risk. And it's a hell. It's dangerous. You can. There's a contamination on that needle. You can get. Your own risk. Better make sure the person knows what your tattooist knows what he's doing. That he's not. He's a hygienic tattooist. It is risky. I mean, I see, and his devotee is dying from a tattoo. Okay, next question.
But is it proper to have a tattoo of Krishna on your leg?
Where?
On the leg.
On the leg? Why they want a tattoo on the leg of Krishna?
I mean, people, they get tattooed all kinds of places.
Other places we don't even mention, I guess. I've seen people get really, you know, big huge tattoos, and they end up giving up Krishna consciousness. So I don't see the advantage of being tattooed. I really don't. I don't see the advantage. If you want to have your body marked in a transcendental way, put tilak on every day. You know. According to Vaishnava scriptures, we put tilak here, 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 here. If you want to mark your body, you can put tilak on every day. I'm not saying you can't do it, but you know, I'm just saying it's not recommended. Bhagavad never recommended that we should do it. It's not recommended in the scriptures. It's not prohibited, but it's not recommended. Oh, is somebody here recommending getting tattoos? You recommending it?
No, absolutely not. I wonder why it's forbidden to make tattoos, because if you go on toilet, you have to bring Krishna on toilet. You're even allowed to wearing a shirt where there's a photo of Krishna.
It's not really a big issue. I mean, what's
why ISKCON don't forbid to wear tattoos? Because if you wear Krishna on your body and you go to toilet and so on, it's not nice.
Yeah, but the Krishna is also present in the form of the tilak, and you know, where you're. I see your point, and I also don't wear the tilak. I mean the tattoo. I don't think we want to be so. I think there's a certain amount of leniency in terms of rules and regulations. We don't want to make it like a military base. I don't think we want to make some GBC resolutions that tattoos are forbidden. They're very popular nowadays, and many people, you know, think, "Wow, I've already got a tattoo. I guess I can't become a devotee now because it's already tattooed on."
But if it is in this way,
huh?
If it is in this way, when you have joined ISKCON, and so the people that tell you, they say you should not wear a tattoo because, and to tell that.
Well, I personally, I don't know.
When he have a tattoo by of Krishna.
If my disciples asked me, I would say no, don't do it. So I'm against it. But I'm not so sure we should make an official policy out of it, you know, a GBC resolution. It may be a little too, it seems to me a little bit too draconian to do that. But if my disciples asked me, or any of you asked me, should I, Sankarshan Prabhu, do you think I should get some tattoos? I'd say it's not necessary. Why waste your time with something that's not necessary? That's what I would say. Yes.
Topic.
Huh?
Maybe if I allowed a change of topic, this Bhagavatam is mentioned as Shrama Hyeva Kevalam. If one performs one occupational duty, but it does not progress one's Krishna consciousness, considered a waste of time.
Mm.
So how is it that one can make sure that one's duty is not fall into that category? How can we make care that
Yes, one has to see, is the result of my work being offered to Krishna? Not theoretically, but practically. That's the key. You have to see, is this pleasing Krishna? Am I pleasing Krishna by the way I engage my activities, my thoughts, my words, my deeds, are they pleasing the Krishna? If they're not, then it's shrameva kevalam, it's useless labor. It's not so much the activity, but it's what you do, the results of the activity that makes the difference. So, everyone, for example, makes money. They work and they make money. Not everyone, but many people do. So, how do you spend the money? Do you spend it in a way that pleases Krishna or not? You spend in a way that is pleasing to Krishna, then that activity is, that money-making activity is beneficial. You spend in a way that is not pleasing Krishna, then it is shrama-eva kevalam, useless labor. So it's how you utilize the fruit of the work that will make the difference. Just like someone may be a very powerful orator, a very powerful speaker, and attract many students. So what does he do with all those students? He engages them in Krishna's service, or he engages them in his own personal service? The mentality, you see, that makes a big difference. If someone is very eager to engage everything in Krishna's service, whatever may come, then that is very good, whatever he's doing. If he engages that in Krishna's service, it is very good. But if he just wants to engage in his own sense gratification, then whatever it may be, it's shrama eva kevalam, it's useless labor. Okay, let's see, here we go. There comes so many desires. Let's see, coming up in the mind all the time. How to control it? Okay, yes, that's a good question. The way to control those desires that come up in the mind all the time is to not take them very seriously. Apuryamanam vachala pratishtam samudramapa pravishanti yadvat tadvat kamayang pravishanti sarve shashamtam apnoti nakama kami. Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita chapter 2, text number 70. A person who is not disturbed by the incessant flow of desires that enter like rivers into the ocean, which is ever being filled but always remains still, can alone achieve peace, and not the man who strives to satisfy such desires. So the key is, when those desires come, don't let them carry you away. Just let them come and go. You see. that ocean, even during the rainy season, when the rivers are pouring billions of gallons of water into the ocean still keeps the same level. Oh good, the Bhagavad Gita's have come. Very good. So we encourage everyone tonight to purchase a Bhagavad Gita, and if you, anyone who purchases tonight, we will give you a special blessing in your Bhagavad Gita. I have a pen. Someone can give me a pen, and I'll give you a special blessing if you take Bhagavad Gita tonight. So, in this Bhagavad Gita, it is saying there. Oh, okay, very good. We're all set now. But at the end of the lecture, at some point in the program, we'll have the Bhagavad Gita, little Bhagavad Gita opportunity for everyone who wants to pick up their copy of this book, which will liberate them from the cycle of birth and death. So, this is the wonderful instruction of Krishna, that if you can just be like that ocean, even though so many material desires may flow into your consciousness, you just let them go through. Just don't let them, don't hold on to them. Just let them pass on through, you see. In this way, you keep the same level, even though a sinful desire may come, a material desire may come. Well, here it comes. Okay, let it go. You don't hold on to it. You just let it come. Here it comes, and let it go. Hello? Goodbye. Mind them. See, it's like, oh, have sex with that. Oh, you really need to have some sex. Well, no, no, no. Just get out of here. I'm chanting Hare Krishna. That's better than, a million times better than sex any day. So this way you have to just conquer over it by not letting yourself be carried away. Concerning the story about Lord Chaitanya and his servant earlier today isn't taking prasadam service. Yes, it is, but Govinda was being very humble. He was taking, it actually is devotional service to take prasadam. It's not sense gratification. But he was taking a very, very humble mood in his loving ecstasy of serving Lord Chaitanya. And that's why he said it was sense gratification. Is that all the questions? All right.
But isn't that taking prasadam is a service, but it is a personal service. And giving service and putting service within ourselves, isn't that different?
Yes.
I can.
It's a matter of, it is devotional service to take prasadam. I mean, there's no doubt. It's not selfish, it's devotional service. But at the same time, you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, okay. It is similar, but it's like someone keeping the deity in the home. I have heard one of the lectures that it is said that someone is earning money. It is a service. But I had heard in one lecture that that I offer everything to my deity. But the result is that if I give it to the temple, then that temple Krishna takes away from me, but my deity gives back to me.
Yeah.
So one is giving away and another one is coming back.
Yeah.
So it is service, but it is self-centered service. Wouldn't that be like that?
Yes, that's a good analogy. Yes, good analogy. And Govinda is humbly thinking that it is my sense gratification to take prasadam, to step over the Lord's body. Yeah. Lord Chaitanya would have not have taken the sense gratification. That, no, you've gone to Anand Prasadam, that is suitable, that is also devotion. Lord Chaitanya would have taken it like that. But in his humility, you understand, of wanting to be very, very, very pure, he was thinking like that. So, any other question? Everyone's satisfied now. Everybody is eager to conquer over all anxieties? Or is anyone here would like to keep their anxieties? Anyone here would like to keep your anxieties? Your dear beloved anxieties. I can't give up my anxieties, they're so dear to me. Or you like to give up all anxiety? What is it? Huh? Tell me. You want to give it up? Very good. Yeah, this process is the system of giving up all anxieties. The process of pure devotional service brings, as we study this morning, it brings immediate relief from all kinds of material distress. So how does that work? How does it do that? We are meant by our very nature to love the source of our existence, that person who is the source of our existence, who is bestowing unlimited loving kindness upon us at every minute. We are meant by our very natures to reciprocate that love. In other words, that person who is emanating us from himself is there and we are also there. So there's some kind of a relationship there that exists naturally. It's like between the parent and the child. There's a natural relationship. And what is that natural relationship? That is love. So if one tries to deny that natural relationship, there's no question of happiness. If someone loves you and you won't love them back, can you be happy? It's such a dirty, selfish thing not to reciprocate with someone's loving kindness. So that Supreme Person, the source of all existence, Krishna, or you can say Allah, Jehovah, same thing. That Supreme Person is showering his loving mercy upon us. He's breathing our very life air into us, our very existence he's breathing into us. Simply so he can have loving relationship with us. So if we don't reciprocate with that love, there's really no way we can be happy, because we're denying the very nature of our existence is being denied. We may artificially attempt to be happy, but it's all artificial. It won't work. So if we come back to loving that Supreme Person who's the source of our existence, then we reawaken the natural, blissful consciousness, Krishna consciousness. So we have to become, we want to achieve it. Rupa Goswami says it's not by pious activities you can achieve it. Janma kotir sukritairena labhyate, not by pious activities it can be obtained. It's only by tattalayam apimulyam ekalam. It's only by the intense greed to achieve it that one can achieve that pure love for the Supreme Person. And Rupa Goswami advises, if it is available somewhere, if that pure love of God, that Krishna bhakti rasa bhavita mati, that Krishna consciousness, if it is available somewhere, then you should purchase it immediately. You see? So it is available here in this Krishna consciousness movement by the mercy of the great acharyas, our founder acharya Srila Prabhupada, those who are preaching on behalf of Prabhupada with a pure heart, you see, by the mercy of Prabhupada, the previous acharyas, the followers of Prabhupada, right here in this society, our Krishna consciousness society, you can, if you have that intense greed for it, you can get pure love of God. That's a thing. You can get pure love of God. And by that pure love of God, you can purchase God. God becomes your property. So if you own God by your love, can you be lacking in anything? If that person who owns and controls everything is your personal property, can you be lacking in anything? No, you cannot. Do you have a favorite verse in the Bhagavad Gita? I have many favorite verses in the Bhagavad Gita. The Bhagavad Gita is chock full of favorite verses. It is oozing with unlimited nectar, that Bhagavad Gita. It's like a fountain of unlimited bliss, spewing out nectar, inundating the whole world with transcendental bliss. There's nothing like this Bhagavad Gita. It's so sweet. Nothing sweeter than Bhagavad Gita. Yeah, it's very nice. This Bhagavad Gita, actually the first verse that really impacted me, I wasn't even a devotee yet. I didn't even know there was an ISKCON in those days. But I was looking for a system of meditation that would work for me. I tried all the different ones available in the marketplace, Maharishi, Mahesh Yogi, this and that. Nothing worked. So some friend, he told me I could chant Hare Krishna, and I tried that, and then I found a Bhagavad Gita in the library. It was actually not even Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita, but sometimes the verses are correct. Sometimes. Even in the other editions. They really go astray in the purports. But I found an edition of the Bhagavad Gita for this verse. Patram pushpam valam dayam yome bhakta priyachati tadahang bhakti paritam mishnami prayatatmanaha. It was translated correctly in the edition that I found in the library, that Krishna says, if you offer me with love and devotion a leaf, a flower, fruit, or water, I will accept it. So I was amazed. I was astounded. I'd been raised as a Christian, but we never had any idea that you could have some personal reciprocation with God. God was always so far away, you couldn't get close enough to have any kind of interaction with Him, you know. But here, Krishna was saying, I am the Supreme Person, and if you will offer me with love a leaf, a flower, a fruit, or I'll be very happy to accept it from you. And that was amazing to me. So I started doing that. I got a Radha Govinda poster at a gift store. I started offering my food, vegetarian food, to the Lord. And it was an amazing experience. I cannot forget those days. So that's definitely one of my favorite verses, 9:26. Definitely a favorite verse, because that was the first verse that really I connected with. If you offer me with love and devotion, note the with love and devotion, you see. Not that if you offer me, I'll accept it. No. If you offer me with love and devotion, bhaktya. If you offer me with love and devotion, I will accept it. So we see many families, they keep some little picture of Krishna. They put some sugar candy once a week, you see. Meanwhile, they make so many dinners every day, rice, dal, chapati, sabji, this thing, that thing, papers, this thing, so many things. All week long they're eating, eating, eating. Then once a week, a little sugar candy for Bhagavan, you see. Is that love and devotion? You're eating very nicely every day, three meals. Krishna gives his once a week a little sugar candy. Is that love and devotion? You see? If you really love him, how you can let him sit there and get... Would you give your child some sugar candy once a week? No. So if you really love God, then you must feed him every meal. Every meal you must offer. And that is the standard for Vaishnava. They will not put any food in the mouth unless it is Krishna Prasad. They won't touch it. They'd rather starve to death than eat any food which is not offered to Krishna. You see? Of course, we don't starve to death. We eat very nicely. We don't see any Hare Krishna devotees starving. We see some of them are quite fatty, actually. Plump. So, there's no difficulty. If you will offer your food to Krishna before eating, you will get very nice health, become very jolly, and it's very tasty. Very tasty food. So that's definitely my favorite, one of those favorite verses. Okay. Krishna is known as Hari, one who takes away everything. The same time Bhagavatam states, SB states, Akama Sarva, okay. Whether one is free of making all desires or desires nothing, one should worship Hari, the Supreme Person. Why is it that the Indians are afraid to worship Lord Krishna? They think he'll take everything away. Well, first of all, not all Indians are afraid to worship Krishna. There are many people in India who do worship Krishna with great devotion. Krishna consciousness is very popular in India.
Many Indians.
Yes, well, the fact is that many people don't worship. They worship some demigod to get their material desires fulfilled. And I don't know if they're even aware of this meaning of the word Hari. I'm not sure if they are or not. Are they?
They
know that Krishna takes away. That's why they don't offer it.
No.
Generally, they're not aware of that point. But they worship others because they have the idea this will give them immediate fulfillment of material desire. So, but still the issue, it's an interesting question because it is stated that Krishna is the one who takes away everything. So why would you want to worship someone who takes away everything? When you want to try to, at the same time, you're told if you want to get something, you should worship Krishna. So there, it seems to be a contradiction. That's the interesting question you are raising. And it is worthy of discussion, quite worthy of discussion. Whether everyone's familiar with that or is not the issue. But it's an interesting point you brought out. The one thing is that Krishna takes away different things from different people. In other words, there's different levels. If somebody is a materialistic minded person and they approach Krishna to fulfill their material desires, Krishna will fulfill them. For those persons who approach Krishna, who say, okay, Lord, I want to be your devotee, but I still have so many material desires. For those persons, Krishna will take away everything. They're trying to enjoy the material world, they also want a devotee, then Krishna will smash them materially. So they realize, I think I should give up this idea of material enjoyment, it just doesn't work. But then for one who's completely pure in his consciousness, who has no desire except to please Krishna and offer everything in Krishna's service, Krishna gives him the whole world. You see? So there's three categories. The one who has all material desires, the one who is completely pure in his desires, Krishna gives them everything. The one in the middle who can't make up his mind yet, he takes away the material thing to help him become pure. That's the one. Just like Prabhupada, he was completely pure devotee. Krishna, whatever he needed materially, okay. He wanted the Fisher Mansion. He had no money immediately. In fact, he even told the real estate agent, I want you to donate that mansion. We have records. We have no money. Please donate it. The real estate agent was shocked. He was thinking he was going to get a big commission on this big sale. He was shocked. Oh, my God, what's going on here? He's asking me to donate, arrange for a donation of this mansion. So, yes, for those who are mixed in their position, who can't decide whether they want to be a devotee or a karmi, Krishna takes away any thought of being able to enjoy this material world. That's his kindness. But for those who have all material desires, if they worship God, they just have a desire for material things, he will fulfill, like Dhruva. You see, he will fulfill their desire. So there's no contradiction, really. There's just different categories. Okay, next question. Is that it? The question well has run dry again. All right. So, if there's no question, then we can offer everyone an opportunity to. We can stop here. We thank you very much for your kind attention. These words of wisdom, which have been, which I'm simply repeating to you, what is coming down from Srila Prabhupada and the previous acharyas. We appreciate very much your giving your attention to these words, because these words of wisdom, Vedic wisdom, are very powerful. Anyone who hears them with submissive aura of reception will be greatly benefited and greatly blessed by that hearing. So we'll go ahead and stop here. We thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srila Bhagavad Gita ki jai.